This episode was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Their systems of law and knowledge long predated that of the modern lawyers who arrived in Australia, and they hold the memories, the traditions, the cultures, and the hopes of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
Welcome to Unravelled, the DWL podcast.
Diverse Women in Law is a not-for-profit organisation based in Sydney. Our aim is to empower and support diverse women in all stages of their legal studies and career. We aim to provide meaningful structural enablers and awareness-raising initiatives to overcome barriers faced by diverse women in the legal sector.
Welcome to Diverse Women in Law's Unraveled podcast, episode 4. Today's topic is Back Yourself, Navigating Law School and Law Firms as a Young Indigenous Woman. And we will be speaking today with the wonderful Carla Jeffrey. My name is Rose Calalizade. I am the chair of Diverse Women in Law. I'm also a barrister practicing at the Public Defenders Chambers. So in this podcast today, we hope to give the audience a glimpse of what it's been like for a young Indigenous woman to navigate law school and law firms, and to hopefully inspire other women out there to back themselves and to pursue anything that they may initially see as impossible or intimidating or just that little bit out of reach. So in this episode, we're going to delve into your life and into your journey, Carla Jeffrey, a Kamilaroi woman who grew up in Tamworth. Have I got that right?
That's correct. Yep.
So enough from me about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name's Carla. As Rose mentioned, I'm currently a grad in the corporate advisory team at Gilbert and Tobin. I've been at the firm now for 2 years. As Rose said, I grew up in Tamworth, Shilling Kamilaroi land, moved to Sydney in 2016 and have been here since then, and sort of call this place home now. Started law in 2019 and did a Juris Doctor. Finished that last year. That's sort of where I'm at now.
Okay. So Juris Doctor, but that wasn't your first foray into university study, was it?
Yeah. So
what did you do before that?
Yeah. So I did a Bachelor of Art Theory before that. So in high school, law was not on my mind at all. Nothing I sort of thought about at all. And I really loved art at a high school, and I just knew I wanted to go to university, but didn't really know what the options were. I'm the first person in my family to go to university, so I had no one to sort of reach out to ask questions. I moved to Sydney and started an art theory degree with the goal of becoming a curator. Quickly realised, which I think is quite common, that that degree wasn't for me. Yep. And started to look at other things. I sort of considered a marketing degree, a history degree, ancient history degree, but nothing really clicked. And then there was one night when I was in the common room at my college watching Legally Blonde, and this idea crossed my mind. I was like, well, maybe I could do a law degree. You know, I could do it. And then I started to look into it and see and what a law degree would actually involve. And I came across this amazing thing called intellectual property, which I'd never heard of before, and particularly learn about how Indigenous artists and their intellectual and cultural property rights aren't protected adequately. It became my ambition to study in a law degree, and here I am with a law degree.
Fantastic. Yeah. I wonder if Elle Woods knows how many women she has inspired
to take up
law degrees. Now, you did the JD. You said you had an interest in intellectual property. Now you're in commercial law. What attracted you to work in commercial law, since we study so many different areas of law when we're studying at university?
Of course, yeah. I was really lucky, actually. I started a paralegal position in-house at a property firm the same time I started my law degree. And that sort of introduced me to the commercial aspect of law. I sort of fell in love with negotiating contracts, reviewing and negotiating contracts. And that's when I sort of turned my focus to maybe getting some experience in private practice. So I first learned about Gilbert and Tobin when I did what's called the pre-law program at UNSW, which is a 3-week intensive program for Indigenous students. You go in, you study law 9 to 5 every day, you do a number of assessments and assignments, and if you pass those, you get a position in UNSW Law. It's an incredible alternative entry program. And I was a part of that. And one of the, when I was doing that, we actually visited Gilbert and Tobin. And I just loved the firm straight away. And so, you know, doing that contract work in my first paralegal role sort of introduced me to commercial law. And then when I went to Gilbert and Tobin and saw what a private law firm could be like, which was very different to my initial ideas of private practice, I thought this could actually be for me. And this is something that, you know, I could pursue.
Can you tell me a bit about that pre-law program? Nine to five, 3 weeks sounds pretty full on.
It was pretty hectic, yeah. And so it's designed for people or Indigenous students straight out of high school. I actually did as a second year uni student. I was super lucky to be offered a place in that. So it was a little bit, I think, easier for me because I had moved away from home already and I had been living on campus. But yeah, people come and do that program straight out of high school. And it is very, very intensive. But if you're passionate about doing law, it's an incredible alternative entry program. Your ATAR doesn't matter. You don't have to sit the LSAT. And it's hard, but it's very rewarding to work through that and then be offered a place at UNSW Law. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Gosh, I don't know if I'd survive. Three weeks, nine to five.
Well, I mean, I think too, when I did that, it made me realize how much I actually liked law. Because prior to doing that, I had no experience in law. You know, I learned a little bits and pieces about intellectual property. And I, like I said before, I looked into what it would be like to do a law degree. But that really showed me what studying law would be like. And it just made me want to do it even more.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about how we can better support Indigenous law students and graduates. But before I get to that, I want to talk about some stats, and they're not happy stats. Mm-hmm. So Indigenous Australians are extremely underrepresented in the legal field. As at 2020, we had a statistic saying that it was 0.8% of practicing lawyers were identifying as First Nations lawyers. And seemingly there has been a decrease in that. So there is a clear need. There's a clear need. We need to be doing something, and we probably need to be doing something quite differently. So I'd really like to know from you how you think law firms could better support Indigenous law students and graduates, and drawing on your experiences, but also the experiences of others around you.
Yeah, for sure. So I definitely agree. There's some work that needs to be done. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, my impression, and I think the statistics probably speak to this as well, is that there has been a decrease in the number of Indigenous people studying law and also then becoming lawyers. To be honest, I think there's a myriad of factors that play into this, and it goes straight back. It goes all the way back to sort of like the high school level, I think, as well. With regards to private practice, though, I think there's a number of things that law firms can probably do. And I think for me, talking about my own experience, I think one of the things I struggle with the most is a lack of Indigenous representation at the leadership level. So even at Gilbert and Tobin, we have quite a few Indigenous staff, but they're most of them are junior level. So obviously Gilbert and Tobin have an incredible Indigenous cadetship, and so they have a large number of cadets at the moment, but there's a disconnect between the number of cadets and then the number of people who get clerkships, who get grad offers. You know, there's not a huge number of Indigenous people in leadership positions at Gilbert and Tobin. And so I think there's work that needs to be done in that area. Because for me, I'm inspired by seeing people who have lived experiences like I've lived and who are like me in positions that I want to get to. That's the biggest inspiration for me. And unfortunately, I don't think there's enough people in those leadership positions to encourage people to A, go into private practice, and then B, continue in private practice. It's definitely something that Gilbert and Tobin, I know, is working on, and I'm a part of the RAP group there. So hopefully we can get some things in place to increase the number of senior Indigenous lawyers at Gilbert and Tobin, but we'll see.
I think it's really interesting what you say about seeing people in leadership positions and hearing about their lived experience, because hearing about someone's lived experience, I think, gives you an insight into the good and also the bad, and it gives you I think, or it gives me at least some insight into the rocky journey that can happen in a legal career, even to a position of very senior leadership. Yeah. And I think it's kind of comforting as well to know that people who are in positions of leadership have gone through a significant amount to get there and have faced barriers to get there. So I want to ask a little bit about barriers because I think we'll have a lot of law students who'd be really interested to hear about some of the barriers that you might have faced in your studies and also in your time working. And if you could tell us a bit about how you've overcome those challenges or barriers.
Yeah, for sure. So as I mentioned, I was the first person to go to university. So I sort of started with zero idea of what to expect, zero idea of how hard it would be. I had no idea how much money you'd need to live in Sydney. You know, Sydney's an expensive place. It's not like Tamworth. I had no idea how hard the assignments would be. I think I just came in with this impression that it would just be like high school, and it's not. It's very different. So I had to learn quite quickly how to change my thinking essentially when I started university. Financial struggles were hard as well. You know, I was fully supporting myself. I had to work a lot, which obviously meant I couldn't spend as much time on uni assignments. So real balancing act to sort of do that. I knew no one when I moved to Sydney. So obviously, you know, you're trying to balance work, uni assignments, trying to be social and make friends. So that was another issue, but, you know, I made it work, I suppose, and I have some great, incredible friends that I met when I moved to Sydney. And then everything sort of kicked up a level when I started law, you know, I was doing law full time and also working full time. You know, anyone who's studying law out there knows that there's a lot of reading to do when you do a law degree. So that was a struggle, but yeah, again, somehow made it work. And now that I'm actually working in private practice, I think a massive issue that I'm facing as a graduate now is just self-doubt. And I struggle so much with imposter syndrome. I think a lot of people out there do. And yeah, I'm really trying to back myself as much as possible in the work that I do. But I do have days where I'm just like, what am I doing here? Do I belong here? Like, am I smart enough to be here? Because growing up, I never sort of had that confidence. I never sort of considered myself a smart person, you know. And now I'm in a job which is and surrounded by incredibly smart, intelligent people. And I often feel like I'm not at that level. And I'm still learning on ways to overcome that. But I think one of the things that works for me is just taking a step back, being like, no, you do deserve to be here. You've worked really hard to be here. Think of the things that you've achieved to be here. And also just speaking about it with people and being open about it. You know, if I'm ever having those moments where I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know if I deserve to be here. I sit down with my mentor, my buddy, and I say, look, this is how I'm feeling. Can you just give me some feedback? Like, is the work I'm producing actually adequate? Is it okay? Is it good? And they're open, like they give me feedback. They say I'm doing well. And that's all you sort of need to overcome those concerns.
Back yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly. What we keep saying. That's it. Back yourself.
That's the way we've got to tell ourselves.
I know, it's easier said than done. And, you know, like there's so many incredible, like I meet so many incredible law students out there particularly. And I'm like, you know, you need to back yourself. Go for this role. Do this. Like, you know, but I often don't listen to my own advice, you know.
You'd be surprised how many people suffer from what you call imposter syndrome, even up into the most senior echelons of the profession.
Yeah, I never knew what imposter syndrome was until I started studying law, and then I learned what it was, and I'm like, I definitely have that. And I think everyone experiences that, you know. I think it's very common. And, yeah, I think you just got to talk about it more. You just got to be open about it. If you're feeling that way, speak to someone, you know, because chances are that person has felt that way at some point in their career. Yeah.
Now, you said you came from Tamworth to Sydney with no friends here and no networks. I want to know just a little bit about how you built your networks within law when you were studying, but also within the legal industry. Was it through formal programs? Was it informal? Was it a combination of the two?
Yeah, a bit of a combination of the two. So again, doing that pre-law program through UNSW enabled me to get some really key, I made a lot of friends through that initially. And then, you know, UNSW particularly, and I'm sure all unis sort of do this, they send out emails about events that are on and sort of opportunities, so paralegal and cadetship opportunities and stuff like that. And so I always made sure to go to events and sort of network that way. Once again, once I visited Gilbert and Tobin, I always went to sort of their events and tried to network that way. I just tried to, because to me, from the very beginning, when I started studying law, I knew that it was important to have friends in this space. And it's important to network and reach out to people and build connections. I think it's an industry that really requires that. So I always tried my best to go to any sort of event that I could, be a part of anything that I could, to try and make sure to build those connections. Yeah.
So those events that you went to, say the ones you went to when you were in law school, were there ever in any events that you went to where you didn't know anyone there?
Yeah, so I went to a couple of Gilbert and Tobin events like that, and Gilbert and Tobin still have those events.
Yeah.
So I think they're called like Indigenous student law student networking nights. And yeah, you just rock up, you have some snacks, a network, and you know, I've met some incredible people through that. And still go to them today. So I still make sure to go to those events and can continue to meet new people. It's a little bit intimidating. Like I definitely someone who a bit shy and a bit quiet. And I don't often like going to events where I know no one. But once you're there, you have a good time and you can meet people that you'll know throughout your career. So definitely worth going to those sorts of events.
I'm going to delve a little bit more into those types of events. I think a lot of people exclude themselves from events where they don't know anyone there.
Yeah.
Because they think, I'm not going to be able to speak to anyone or I'm going to feel excluded or all the other feelings that might go through one's mind at that moment. And there's that dreaded point in the event where you don't know anyone. You've just walked in, you've just got your name badge, you've just picked up a glass of water and you look around and you go, where do I go?
Yes, I've been there many times.
What do you do in that moment? What do you tell yourself or what steps do you take in that moment when you're ready but you just don't know a single face in the room?
Yeah, I think that's definitely quite daunting. And the first time I was in that position, I absolutely hated it. But you've just got to take a moment and be like, well, this event is made to meet people that you don't know. Anyone here is willing, like people have come here to meet people that they don't know and to like network. That's what these events are for. I just try to tell myself, you can go up to anyone in this room right now and they'll speak to you. You know, it's a place where you can have open conversations. That's the point of these events. Yep. Again, probably something that's easier said than done.
Yep.
But that's what I try to tell myself. I'm like, just go up to that person, just speak to them. That's why you're here. That's why they're here as well.
Yeah. It's sort of when you overcome that first barrier and you start speaking to someone, the rest of it just sort of flows, right?
Exactly, yeah. So and then you just hop between little groups and you meet lots of people, you learn lots of things. Yeah.
I want to ask you a bit about diversity within firms and why it's important. From your perspective, is more diversity needed in commercial law, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I do think so. And I think there are firms out there that are really working on this and have made progress in this space. But to me, I've always wanted to work in a diverse place because it's important to have people from different backgrounds who have had different lived experiences so you can understand more fully how the world and society works, I think.
And that's what we believe in at Diverse Women in Law, and that's why we're here. I want to ask you specifically about the skills and insights and attributes that Indigenous law students and graduates can bring to commercial law firms. Could you tell us a bit about that?
For me, a lot of the Indigenous law students that I know are so incredibly resilient and ambitious. And I think that's incredibly important in private practice. A lot of the people I know have lived through some pretty hard stuff and they've fought to get to where they are. And I think that makes them pretty incredible people. They're also obviously, like most of the Indigenous law students I know, incredibly intelligent, know the law and stuff like that. But I think for me, what Indigenous law students bring in particular, it comes down to who they are as people. The Indigenous people I work with, they're just so dedicated to what, and they're so passionate and resilient and ambitious. And I think that is what inspires me the most when I speak to my Indigenous colleagues.
I want to ask you about a specific experience that you've had working on native title and land rights. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that you were doing there?
Yeah, so that was when I worked at a small private law firm called Chalk and Barrett. It was a while ago now. I actually only worked there for a year, and it was the first year of COVID-19. So unfortunately, didn't get as much experience there as I would have liked. That firm, so the lawyers who worked there are some of the leading native title lawyers and land right lawyers in the country. So it was incredible to work alongside them. And their clients for that firm, primarily local land councils. And sort of we did work we worked so closely, like it wasn't just advising them on legal aspects. It was often advising them on sort of how to run their business as well, essentially. So it was kind of like the full package, offering them the full package, I suppose. I only worked there for a year, unfortunately, before I moved to Gilbert and Tobin. So didn't work on too many sort of big cases. Incredible. Like I loved the time I had there. And the work the firm does is, really, really good. Yeah.
You said that you can see Indigenous law students coming through into sort of the entry level type positions, clerkships and cadetships, but it's not really translating into grad roles and it's not really translating into the higher levels of leadership within firms. And so we need to do something about that.
Yes.
We need to do something about that, but I don't think we've quite figured out what we need to do about it. Do you have any ideas about what we could do to try and see that transition and that continuation of those students going into law firms?
So the first step I think is that private firms need to make sure that their offices and their workplaces are culturally supportive and safe spaces for Indigenous people. I think there's a lot of things that can be done, but I think the first step is to really confirm and ascertain what the issues are. And I think to do that, we need to hear from Indigenous lawyers about what difficulties they have within their workspace. So this actually brings me to something that I've worked on in the past couple of months with Jason O'Neill, who is the Indigenous the Director of Indigenous Education at UNSW Law. So we actually created a survey together that we've put out. It's out there now. And we'd like all Indigenous lawyers and Indigenous students, or anyone who studied law in the past and identifies as an Indigenous and is an Indigenous person, to take this survey so we can ascertain what the real issues are, not just at the work sort of like level, but also at the university level. I think it's something that we can't fix the problem unless we actually fully know where the problems lie, whether it's, people don't want to study, whether people don't want to study law because they don't think that it's something that they could achieve, whether people stop studying law because they don't feel accepted at university or they have issues there. And then in the workplace, whether people leave practice because they don't feel culturally supported in their workplace. We want to know that so we can put together something that addresses those issues and put together some recommendations on how these issues can be fixed.
I think that's right, because if we want to be able to come up with meaningful recommendations that will actually resonate, we need to know what people are thinking.
Exactly.
We need to know what Indigenous law students are thinking or clerks are thinking, and we need to know how to be able to facilitate that continuing support and transition in the firm. Otherwise, if we just start making things up, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't necessarily know right now what the fix is, but hopefully once we get some data and we see what the actual issues are, we can come up with some solutions to those issues.
Is that survey something that's available at the moment?
It is, yes. So if anyone out there is listening and would like to take part in this survey, please message me. I'm on LinkedIn and I'll send you a link to the survey, because we really want to get as much data through that survey as possible so we can really put forward some meaningful recommendations. Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, I'm going to backtrack a little to when you mentioned high school.
Yes.
and I think you said something to the effect of, well, we need to be thinking about this when students are in high school and not just thinking about it when they're at uni or when they're past uni and things are have moved in a totally different direction. When you were at high school, did you ever think a career in the law was going to be the thing for you?
No, absolutely not. I didn't even really know what it meant to be a lawyer in high school. And I definitely, I just thought, you know, being a lawyer was so far above me. It wasn't even something like, you know, I contemplated doing legal studies at school and then completely decided, I just said, no, I'm not going to do that because there's no way I'll be able to understand anything that's going on there. It's so, so far above what my capacity is, you know. And I was wrong at that stage. And all I think all I needed was someone to turn to me and say, why don't you back yourself? Why don't you give it a go? Like, you never know what you're capable of until you're actually in the in that position. And yeah, I do wish that I had a little bit more confidence in myself back then, and, you know, reached for some higher goals than I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it would have made a difference for you if someone had come to your school who was a First Nations lawyer and spoke to you and told you about their journey?
Definitely, definitely would have. I mean, that's what made the difference for me in the end. Like I said, when I first visited Gilbert and Tobin and I saw Eloise there, who's the head of CSR, this incredible, like, Indigenous woman who has paved an incredible career for herself at the firm, when I saw her, I was like, well, maybe I can work here. Maybe this is for me. And I think if we can start getting people to think that way in high school and encouraging them to actually start studying a law degree, I think, you know, that could make a huge difference, could get more Indigenous people into legal practice.
How long have you been in the legal profession now?
Oh, I still feel, I can't believe I'm in the legal profession, to be honest. So I started as a paralegal in 2019. So how many years is that?
So we're at about, what, 4 years or so as a since you were a paralegal. And then before that, you were studying law for how long?
Oh, so I started studying law and started as a paralegal at the same time.
Okay, all right. So you have been, you went right into the deep end of the legal profession by doing both at the same time.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so it's been 4 years. In those 4 years, do you think you've seen change around you?
I think if you had have asked me 2 years ago, I would have said definitely. But I think, or maybe 3 years ago, but I do think things have taken a backward step, and I think COVID has played a big role in that. So, for instance, you know, like when I was studying law, I was heavily involved in all the Indigenous sort of alternate entry programs and mentoring programs there. And that was always really fulfilling because I could see all these people coming from high school to do the pre-law programs. And there were large numbers of them, you know, they were coming through and I was able to mentor them and tutor them. And it really made me feel like things were moving in the right direction. But then COVID came and sort of, the pre-programs had to stop and they haven't really built up again. So, for instance, when, you know, a few years ago before COVID, the pre-law programs were at max capacity with 15 to 17 students taking on pre-law. And I think last year there was 3. So that's definitely a step in the wrong direction. I know other universities are doing a little bit better than UNSW, but I still think, I still think a little bit more effort needs to be put in to try and get it back up to what was being done pre-COVID. Yeah.
You mentioned mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
You said you had a mentor and a buddy and my ears pricked up because I thought that sounds pretty cool. I know what a mentor is. I'm not 100% certain what a buddy is, but I'll ask you to explain. Can you tell us a little bit about who your mentor and your buddy are and how this came about? Is it through Gilbert and Tobin or is it through some other avenue?
Yeah, so it's through Gilbert and Tobin. So as a grad at Gilbert and Tobin, we all have a buddy and a mentor. A mentor is a senior lawyer. So my mentor is, his name's Mooli. He actually won Mentor of the Year this year at Gilbert and Tobin. So he's incredible. And then my buddy, her name is Kim. She's more of a junior lawyer and I sort of call on her for any sort of silly little question I have about formatting docs or signature blocks or anything like that. Right. It's a really good system and make sure that I can learn as much as possible at sort of two different levels. through my time at Gilbert and Tobin, though, I've had a number of mentors. So when I first started in the Indigenous cadetship, I had a mentor called Louise Buckingham. She works in IP. Incredible woman, very passionate about Indigenous IP as well, which obviously is an area I'm really, really passionate about. And I regularly catch up with her still. And then, you know, I have a very close connection with Kimberly Peckham, who is an Indigenous woman at Gilbert and Tobin, works in the corporate social responsibility team. And we work, like, we always grab coffee and we're always talking about ideas on how we can make the firm better and how we can get more Indigenous people in the door and how we can make sure that they're retained. Being able to have a friendship and a work relationship with someone like Kim particularly, who has sort of lived through similar experiences to me and is just a strong Aboriginal woman, has been, yeah, really amazing, to be honest, yeah.
Fantastic. Did you have any mentors when you were going through university?
I didn't necessarily have mentors, but I had a lot of people that I could reach out to for support. So once again, like, I always reached out to people at Nurigili, the Indigenous support staff at UNSW, if I ever needed anything. And I always reached out to the people I met through the pre-law program. You know, we bonded. If you're going to be in a program with someone for 3 weeks, you're going to bond. So I made some great friends that way. And they were always there during my first few years of law.
What advice do you have for Indigenous law students and graduates who want to pursue a career in commercial law?
Yeah, I have a lot of little bits and pieces I could tell you. I have a lot of advice I could share, but I think the biggest one, and it's the name of this podcast, is to back yourself. It's really important. And I wish I had someone that just told me when I was in high school to give it a go, but try and, like, just believe in yourself. You're never going to know what you're capable of until you put yourself out there and give it a go. So if you're out there and you're considering studying law, or if you're studying law and you're considering going for a paralegal position or a clerkship position this year, I know clerkship's coming up. I know it can be really daunting and that self-doubt can creep in, but, you know, you've got to just give it a go. The worst that can happen is you get knocked back from a position or something like that. You go for the next one. You're not going to know what you're capable of unless you give it a go. And then I also think it's really important to talk to people around you, talk to people that have lived through these things prior to you. You know, there's some incredible Indigenous lawyers out there who have paved the way for us, who are, you know, absolute inspirations and would be more than willing to answer any questions that you have. Definitely reach out to me if you have any questions. I know the clerkship, like I said, the clerkship process is coming up. So talk to anyone and ask as many questions as you can. There are two bits of advice I'd probably give. Fantastic. Simple advice, but yeah.
Valuable advice. Yeah. Thank you so much, Carla.
We're
so delighted to have had you and to have heard from you about your journey and the advice that you have for law students who are coming through, for maybe even Indigenous high school students who are interested in a career in the law. This might be the talk that makes the difference.
Oh, I'd hope so.
So we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on 4 years in the legal profession. I think the reality only just hit today.
Yeah, I was like, wow.
We're so excited to see where your career goes after this.
Me too.
And thank you so much for the most important part of this podcast, which has been that piece of advice you left us with at the end, to back yourself.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me. It's been an absolute privilege. So thank you.
It's a pleasure. It's our pleasure. Thanks.